Road Trip After Hours. Presents. Magnum T.A. In the world of professional wrestling, there is one story of a meteoric rise that came to a sudden stop. Magnum T.A. started his career in 1981. Naming himself after the TV character Magnum P.I., he would go on to wrestle in the NWA, Championship Wrestling from Florida, Pacific Northwest Wrestling, and Mid-South Wrestling. In 1984, Jim Crockett Promotions signed Magnum, who began feuding with Wahoo McDaniel and winning the United States Heavyweight Championship. Magnum would also find himself at war with the Four Horsemen, and more specifically, Tully Blanchard with Baby Doll. The two men would find themselves inside a steel cage for the famous I Quit match. Being groomed and expected to be the new world's heavyweight champion, Magnum's future was changed in the blink of an eye. After losing control of his car and striking a telephone pole, the crash would leave him paralyzed and unable to ever wrestle again. Tragedy to triumph. Magnum T.A.
Magnum, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, sir?
Man, I'm doing great, Teddy. I haven't seen you in like too long, man. We're not running into each other every other month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, man, it's great to see you here on the show, man. And I want to personally thank you so much for coming on with me and Mac, man, being our guest. And what an honor it is to talk to you. And I never did tell Mac about this. And because he was asking me, you know, about me and you. And a lot of people don't know. Is the first time you made your return after the accident, Baltimore, Maryland, the Crockett Cup. I was one of the guys that was walked down with you right there at your side.
Yeah, that was talk about a moment and an emotional piece of history for me. I'll never forget it in that feeling, and that Baltimore crowd was so electric anyway.
Yes.
Well, that was because of the love of the character for who you were portraying all that time. I mean, that character was something else to those fans. I mean, when you got hurt, they were hurt with you. Even, you know, I remember seeing the cover of one of the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, maybe one of those magazines where, you know, you're looking at one of the people you were feuding with saying he cries for Magnum. You know, that to me, it just showed the love that not only the fans have, but also the workers there during that time. And to see you come back after what was said that you would never walk again. And Teddy kind of stole it from me. Yeah, that was one of the first pictures I saw when I started doing some research on you. It was a picture of you, Teddy, and I can't tell who the other referee was.
Tommy Young.
Was it Tommy Young?
Probably. Believe me, it was Tommy Young.
But it was it was cool to see that. What kind of moment was that for you coming out? Was it frightening at first? What was going through your mind?
Well, first of all, I wasn't sure how I was going to navigate that long walk.
Yes.
Because that was, you know, that might as well have been 10 football fields to me at that time.
Yeah.
So I had to get geared up to get from the back to the front more than I used to, you know, run down to the ring.
Yes.
So it was really special. I mean, I was in the hospital for 5 months, and that was my, you know, my first appearance back out in the public. And you know, I wanted them to see me under my own power, you know, obviously, you know, never, you know, going to be the specimen that they remember me to be when I was competing. But from having nothing and being neck down quadriplegic and, you know, being told you had a 1,000,000-to-1 shot, it was something that, you know, it wasn't certainly the way that I wanted to be viewed, because in my mind, you know, I was 27 years old. I mean, I still was, you know, been in my prime athletic, you know, condition. But I really wanted those people to see, you know, that it was about overcoming, and it was about something bigger than the sport, because yes. they'd taken me in like a family member that had gone down, and I wanted them to, you know, see that.
Terry, let me ask you, during that time, how much was it beating you up inside not to be able to perform again? That had to be tough, because it's not like it was something to say, well, you know, you're going to have to stop wrestling because, you know, you've been doing it for a long time. The truth of the matter was you hadn't been in wrestling an incredibly long time when this had happened. And so your entire future just like that changes. What does that do to you as a performer?
It was really difficult to navigate, because I wanted to do whatever I could to try to, you know, find a path, pivot, do something. And I'd always done, you know, a little color commentating work over the years with different things and stuff that we'd done. So that wasn't unfamiliar ground to me. And that was kind of, you know, something that I was willing to throw my hat out there and try. But it was very, very difficult to be that age and talking about something, you know, as if it was, you know, 20 years in your rearview mirror.
Yes.
And being retired. And it was a hard headspace to operate in. It really was. There wasn't like some satisfaction of accomplishment or feeling that, you know, made me feel, like I was really doing something that was moving the needle or doing something. And even though I had been in the business just a touch under 7 years. And so all that accomplished, you know, happened, you know, basically from 1983-ish to October 14th of 1986, when it came to that dramatic end. And, it was hard to relate. It was hard to relate to young guys that were making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and therefore constituted themselves a star. And what could I even offer up or talk to them about? And it was kind of, you know, it was hard to find a way to interact and feel like you were, you know, doing something that was helping to make it a better product.
I imagine it would be difficult too, to sit there and watch a wrestling match unfold when all you really want to do is be in there wrestling. That just doesn't leave you, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I've never like been one of those, you know, like spectator type people.
Yes.
Like all growing up. I mean, I loved amateur wrestling and I loved playing sports and I loved doing things, but watching other people do it or talking about other people doing it, you know, that was just never the way I was wired. So it was a hard spot to, you know, try to find your way through and, you know, realize, you know, your limitations, because though, you know, I'd come so far from, you know, from nothing, it was still a fraction of what, you know, I was accustomed to tasking my body to do. And they told me in the hospital that athletes, particularly with this kind of injury, had the toughest time with it for that reason, because our expectations were so high. And what we consider an accomplishment to some, most people would seem Herculean and not even in their wheelhouse of thinking. But that was just the day-to-day things we were accustomed to doing.
Teddy, you have a question for him before I keep going, because I don't want to just
take over. You do that anyway, so I don't worry about it. I don't really have a question, but, you know, I was just sitting here and I was listening to you and Magnum with the conversation, you know, about the injury, what that effect that had on him, you know, after coming from this big major star. And in my eyesight, Magnum is a bigger major star now than he was then. See, let me explain something to you, what a real man would do. Magnum is a real man. And I say real man because some guys would have took that injury and knew just how popular and just how big and over they were. They would have took that injury and it would have crushed them. They would have went and hid because they wouldn't have wanted anybody to see them in the position that they're in now. But Magnum understands this. Magnum is a Christian. What happened is God's call. But Magnum didn't run from it. Magnum came right out. Next time I saw him, he was right out. He comes out on his scooter. He comes to the meet and greet. He ain't ashamed to talk to nobody. So that's what real men do. So Magnum, yes, real man, player.
Well, thank you. And that means a lot, because, you know, the whole thing is, of course, I miss the performing. You know, anybody that's ever been in the center stage and feeling all the love, the accolades, you know, the shine that you get from being in that main event spotlight, it's an adrenaline rush that nothing in life really, you know, compares to. And it's why you see so many guys have trouble making a graceful exit.
Yes.
Not only do they not know how to do anything else, they are so addicted to that, you know, that pop, that feel, that rub you get from all these people adoring what you do, and trying to find your way in life and putting things back in some proportion and getting some balance is no easy task.
No.
See, you have to make up in your mind when you're ready to take the cape off. Because once you take the cape off, then you know your mind is made up what you're gonna do there. So now you gotta live with that. So I know I took the cape off. I'll go back if you need me or whatever. I appreciate everything I get now, my deal, the Legends deal and all that, but I'm enjoying the rest of my life. I made it. God blessed me to be successful. I don't want to mistreat nobody. All I want to do is go out, meet the fans, do my signings or whatever WWE needs me or whatever, and enjoy the rest of my life, man.
Well, Ted, you know, Daddy, it's like I was thankful every day that I kept my mind and that I didn't have a head injury. I didn't have my capacity to still communicate, to still share, and still talk to people and hear their stories and how things made them feel and how it impacted their lives. Because without that interaction, you know, it would be overwhelming. Life would just be too much.
Yes.
I've been able to enjoy that and that brotherhood that we had 35 years ago. You know, Teddy and I can sit down and break bread today and be right back there in 2 seconds. Just had to warm up. You know, we're there, you know.
Because it was real.
Magnum, let me ask you, we're running out of time, but you had told me a story when I had interviewed you one time before, and it was about the cage match, the I Quit match with Tully Blanchard. And we were talking about the weapon that came into play during that match, which was the spike. And you had told me that it just happened to be a chair under the ring. I was asking you, was that something planned? And you said, no, it happened to be that Baby Doll was strong enough to find that chair and toss it in. Is that right?
Absolutely. And we knew we had to have a gimmick. And there's not many women that in a pair of heels can throw a wood chair, hurl it over. And she didn't make it the first toss. She'll tell you she didn't make it the first time. And she told me all she could think was Tully was going to kill her if she didn't figure out how to get that over there. And she, you know, she Herculean tossed it over, Wonder Woman that she was. And and then it just breaks into the most god awful looking thing you've ever seen in your life. You know, gosh, you know, who picked that thing up and threw it in the trash can? We should have had that at a museum somewhere.
Yeah, can you imagine if you found that or somebody kept that over all these years, how much money that would be worth now on eBay? Good Lord, that was a big part of history, seeing that spike come down. That's you know, a visual in my mind that I will never forget.
Somebody's got it.
Oh, somebody had to. Somebody. Magnum, any road stories you can share with us on the show that you can recall? Who did you travel with, by the way? Did you travel by yourself?
I traveled with lots of guys, you know, in the different territories I worked in, but
yeah.
Some of the most fun stuff before I became Magnum was when Barry Windham and I and Dusty Rhodes were traveling together in Florida, because that's when all that, you know, got a little liquid, you know, the libation in you and all the creativity would come out. That's when the Midnight Rider was born. And that's when, you know, we heard about the Superstation and going, you know, creating Starcade and all those kind of things. And, you know, and those were the special times that, you know, I remember, because, you know, what seemed like just fun and, you know, games at the time ended up being something that unfolded into legendary things that, you know, were to come when Crockett Promotions and, you know, things we're still talking about, you know, 35, 40 years later.
Rockstar life. Would you pretty much say that's kind of what that period was in wrestling?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, bigger than life, and you know, treated, you know, like you were, you know, as big a superstar as Elvis Presley, you know, back in the day. So it was.
It's hard to explain to fans too, who were younger and weren't around during that time. But the fans themselves were different. The atmosphere was different. It was a more enjoyable time of wrestling than it is now. It's so overproduced now. I was used to it being like a light hanging over the ring, and the guys came out, trash talked, and then they did their business and moved on. It was edgy. It was fun, and it was a lot more entertaining personally for me. But Magnum, thank you so much for being on the show. I do want to mention, though, we were talking to Greg Gagne, and he had said that you two had a podcast I wasn't aware of. Tell us about the podcast.
We have a podcast. It's called Straight Talk with the Boss with Magnum T.A. and Greg Gagne. And we talk about current events, things going on. We talk about things we're promoting on Powertown Wrestling, our action figure company. Yep. And, you know, we just try to mix it up a little bit and some of the old stuff with the new stuff. And
yeah,
and you know, I watch what you guys do, and we've all got such great memories, and it's great to be able to, you know, answer some questions for the fans and share some old stories.
What's one of the strangest things you've ever been asked, Magnum?
You know, you would have to ask something like that. I can't really even think of an awkward question at the moment.
That was probably the worst one you ever had. Was just right then. So
yeah, I got that deer in the headlights look. Right? I don't know.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And Teddy, anything you want to say before we go?
Yes, ideas. If with your permission, okay.
Absolutely.
Magnum. I just want to thank you too, man. Like I said, you and I, we have a lot of history. And I wanted you to personally say hello to your son. Ladies and gentlemen, his son is always there with the meet and greets with Magnum. What an impressive young man. He is so mannerable. I mean, real respectful. It's really unbelievable. And he's right there at his dad's side. See, a lot of things I don't talk. I just sit back and observe a lot of stuff. And so to watch him, you know, right there with his father, he's learned how to set up and everything goes. And he takes care of all that stuff, man. You know what I mean? And that, to me, you know, that's just great, man. And I love that kid. So, Magnum, you tell him I said to keep on keeping it real.
I will do that, Teddy. And I love you, brother. Good to see you.
Love you too, sir.
Again, our special guest, Magnum T.A. I'm your host, Mac Davis. That's WWE Hall of Famer Teddy Long. And this has been Road Trip After Hours.